My next guest is prepared for a conversation which might be a bit somber. Director of the Kuzi Business Ethics Initiative at the Seidman College of Business, Michael DeWilde, teaching mostly in the graduate programs there. Good morning to you, Michael.
Morning, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Remind me again, the Kuzi Business Ethics Initiative is?
That is it's an outreach center and a research center at the Seidman College of Business at Grand Valley State University. We focus on questions of ethics in business and civic life.
Yes. Your graduate students are doing what after they graduate?
Well, most of them are already working, people in their mid-20s to their 50s, and they work for any number of companies, large, medium, and small, in the West Michigan area. Though also we have a growing number of international students as well.
Thank you for your leadership, and do know that you like the classroom. We want to talk about an article that will be appearing in the Seidman Business Review tomorrow on sexual harassment and empathy, and how you take that on in the classroom and in your consulting work. So we're going to ask that question, Dr. DeWilde. What made you decide to write about this topic and address this in your class?
Yeah, thanks, Shelley. Obviously, it is a fraught topic. People feel strongly about it, and in terms of responses and remedies for it. I don't know that I actually did want to. I mean, obviously, it's an obligation in an ethics course, and I used to address it largely by going over court cases and talking about work policies and the kinds of standard things one would do. But even among the relatively few women who were in the graduate classes, MBA and EMBA, early on when I was teaching, they wanted to say much more about it. They actually, however reluctantly, seemed to want the men in the room to get a better understanding of what it was like for them. When I told a friend of mine, somebody I respect very much, that I was writing about this, it would be out for public consumption, he said, well, that's gutsy. I think it was his way of saying, maybe that's not the smartest thing you've ever done. But it was the preponderance of stories from young middle-aged women in these classes, talking about the coping mechanisms they had to deal with, the faux senses of humor they had to develop. And then there was a young engineer who just was, she said, I love my job, but I hate going into work every day because of what I have to put up with. Death by a thousand cuts in terms of the slights she was up against. And then another woman, the dean of the Seidman College, Diana Lawson, was with me helping me facilitate this along with Shelley Padnos. And a young woman who had a great student, not a shrinking violet at all, said, I changed my major from finance to accounting because I just couldn't imagine a life where I had to either fend off the boys, quote unquote, or, try to become one of them. And she just, and we were all a little astounded by that even now, in the midst of what is supposed to be a somewhat more progressive era, that these stories just keep coming and coming and coming.
In your opinion, how bad is it out there, and has the Me Too movement made things, I'll say, better for women?
I think, from what I hear and read, better in the sense of empowering women, and men, of course, are sexually harassed as well. I don't want to overlook that. In terms of being able to report that, use social media or other avenues. And my response and what we do in class is only one, of course, of a number. And so the reporting, there's a lot of emphasis put on making the reporting process better. One of the latest surveys on sexual harassment, the numbers come in as high as 80% for women. It's a pretty expansive definition of sexual harassment, but they include continuing harassment, both verbal and touching. And they talk a lot the scholars who are crunching doing the analysis on that, saying, we've got to make reporting procedures better. That's right. My approach in class is a little different than that. We have focused more on role-playing, responsiveness, both of men and women. In the article, I focus on one particular role-play, not on the other ones we do, and that one's focus. I used to focus pretty much exclusively on women, involving men as well in terms of thinking about their responses, and that's shifted a little bit, and I talk about that in the article.
So focus first on women, now more on men. What kind of results are you getting, and do you worry about dividing up the genders?
I do and I don't. I mean, obviously, we want to make it inclusive. We want to help everybody understand what the issues are, what the definitions are, possible responses, what's stepping over the line, how do you deal with those kinds of things when they come up, since those are all fraught and perennial issues. Students are always free to decline. They certainly don't have to do it. It's not part of their participation or grade or anything like that. It's a voluntary action. They're free to stop the role play if they feel like it's too much for them. But a lot of the work that we're doing in our research areas is on the enhancement of empathy. You know, and if you don't care about what women or the smaller percentage of men who are being sexually harassed actually feel, if you don't care what they're going through, you've got no real reason or motivation to act. So a lot of what we try to do is see if there are ways through role plays to enhance the empathy, and then are there smarter and better responses than others.
So students, and I know your clients are involved too, seem to be okay with the approach.
I've never had a complaint, and in fact, quite the opposite. I mean, this is very immodest of me, and I apologize, but last month I was honored with a graduate student Outstanding Teaching Award, and I actually do think it has a lot to do with how real it becomes in the classroom, that all the cases are real. None of them are hypothetical, unfortunately. We don't have to make them up. There are far too many. And in my impression, my understanding from the students, they're looking for something that they can take away from the classroom, men and women both, to use at their place of business. Over 40% of women in this latest survey report being harassed at work. I just did one yesterday at a company that I'm working with, and it may or may not be the role play that's so effective, but they spent 90 minutes after the role play talking with one another, even group, evenly split, men and women, about their understanding of sexual harassment, how they deal with it in their respective departments. Does it comply with everything that their company is trying to do? It's a huge deal. People really do, in my experience, want to talk about it if you can provide a fairly safe space for them to do so.
And have you had the question, is the classroom really the appropriate place for dealing with emotions like this? Would there be a risk of opening up a can of worms?
That's always a danger. There, you know, one of the great, most watched TED Talks of all time by Sir Ken Robinson, who was out here at Grand Valley a few years ago, he talked about, you know, that we do a wonderful job of educating people from the neck up. But if the behavioral and cognitive sciences have taught us anything, including people, you know, doing the kinds of things I try to do, is that you ignore people's emotions. The Harvard Negotiation Project, for example, puts a huge emphasis on this. You can't ignore people's feelings. I don't pretend to be a therapist. If something comes up, it only has twice in all the years I've been doing this. Obviously, we direct them and refer them to people who are skilled in dealing with that. But as I said, rather than complaining or shying away from it, people in the evaluation say, this is exactly what we should be doing more of. I wish this sort of thing were actually required.
Where does this approach go from here? Is there any revision in the face of what you're learning?
The article is an excerpt from a much longer research piece. The piece that's coming out tomorrow is aimed at the business audience. It doesn't attempt to qualify every single aspect of what we're doing. There's a longer piece coming out, of course, because there's a lot of contention about role play. Is it really effective? Is it really effective long term? Are there better approaches? I accept that it's an open question. So we'll keep researching. We have two pilot studies going, one in conjunction with Texas Tech, that have been approved by our institutional review boards, and we'll see where all of that leads. But the observational and self-reporting that we get from students and my clients is, we, as I said, as hard as it is, as uncomfortable as it is, we actually think we should be doing more of this rather than less.
What else is coming from your KBEI, your Koozie Business Ethics Initiative?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We are partnering with the Hauenstein Center for an event February 18th. It's a what we hope to be a civil debate on the Green New Deal. So there are three local people who are arguing on behalf of the merits of the Green New Deal, three folks from the state of Michigan who suggesting there probably would be much better approaches than that. That's going to be at the Loosemore Auditorium February 18th from 6 to 8 p.m.
Great. All right. And then this comes out, as you mentioned, tomorrow in your Seidman Business Review. How does one find out more information to read this?
People are free to contact me at Grand Valley. My email is online. This is through the Koozie Business Ethics Initiative or the Management Department at the Seidman College of Business.
Thanks so much to you, Dr. Michael DeWilde. Take care.
Thanks very much, Shelley.